clip works.
Well, who knows?
Well, good afternoon, everyone. As is normally the case when I have to preach, I got sick about 2 days before. It's because Satan doesn't want you guys to hear the word I have for you. But I think you all know me well enough to know that a little cold is not going to keep me from talking. You didn't have to smile so broadly at that. Hold on. All right. So, try to get my voice as normalized as possible. For the last couple weeks, we've been in the book of James. And over the last 2 weeks, notably, when Peter and Holam came up to speak with us, both of which did a great job, by the way, we got to hear a lot about worldly wisdom. The kind of downside to using worldly wisdom as opposed to using godly wisdom. We saw a neat picture of Peter's wrecked car and an even cooler picture of Holam's wrecked face. So we saw some particular examples of when following our own thoughts and motives and things, things don't work out too terribly well. We get this impression that using worldly wisdom, wisdom in and of ourselves, always leads to something bad, right? I have this first slide here. I'll give you a second to read these because they're really funny. And if you're just listening to this on audio, then sorry, you're missing out. But but that's the kind of idea we get when we talk about worldly wisdom, right? Like, just not quite all there, you know, kind of limited, and it ends up not working, right? But what happens when worldly wisdom ends up rather like this? Can we go to the next slide? Now, as you may recognize, that's a Tesla, right? It's a pretty big, expensive car. That is also a manifestation of worldly wisdom. I mean, I don't know Elon Musk personally, but I doubt that when he was designing this car, he just spent the night in prayer saying, God, where should I put the capacitor? If capacitor's even a thing, you know, or God, should I make it automatic or a manual transmission? Whatever. All the tech guys are laughing at me. Capacitor. It's Back to the Future. But anyway, no, I mean, this is the outgrowth of his worldly wisdom, right? I mean, he went to school, he's an electrical engineer, he deals with all these various different technical aspects of life and so on and so forth. And he's a really bright individual. And these are all things that he put together for the purposes of making money, right? To make an impact on the world. That's a manifestation of worldly wisdom. So, see, oftentimes that the message about worldly wisdom is that it just leads to bad things. That we don't know the plans of God, so we just mess it up. And that's part of it, and we can see that sometimes, but that's not the whole of it. We're in James chapter 4 today, verses 11 to 17. And the title of this message is You Cannot Take God's Throne. When I first started looking at these verses today, between 11 and 17, if you've read this passage before, this seems to be like two different messages. It seems like there's two different things going on. The first part is about not slandering your brothers in Christ, not talking bad about people, right? And the second part is about not boasting. So when I read through that the first time, I was like, well, I could give two sermons, you know? I could just talk about, you know, don't talk bad about your brothers, okay? Now we're going to switch gears, and now we're going to talk about not boasting of your own abilities, okay? But then I prayed over for a while, and I looked a little deeper, and it occurred to me, this is one message. To attempt to take God's place puts your own wisdom up as an idol that you worship. We have talked about worldly wisdom and that it's bad. But I'm going to propose to you today that it's bad because we put it in the place of God, not necessarily because it leads to bad things all the time. We can see here in verse 11, we'll start things off. Brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister or judges them speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you are not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. Anyone who judges judges the law. You are, in effect, saying that you are the arbiter. You're the one in a position to call balls and strikes. You are above the law because you are the one interpreting it. You're the one saying these are what's good and bad. You use it as a tool to judge or to slander. When you do this, you're not keeping the law. You are not loving your neighbor. You're using it to beat your neighbor up. If I'm saying, oh, Hoyan never prays in the morning. He doesn't get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and pray before sunrise like I do every day. He's not living a right Christian life. Or Adrian doesn't read his Bible every night before he goes to bed. Well, you know, that's not right either. He's not living a right Christian life either. We use it as a tool. See, what this does is it places you in a position of control. You're the one able to tell people they're not doing the right thing. You're using the law, this written set of documents, this, that, and the other thing. You're not doing things right. And then we use it in that way, ultimately, for ourselves. It's to make ourselves feel better. We judge others so that by comparison we can feel better about how we behave ourselves. I mean, think about, why do you judge other people? Is it to help them? No. We talked about this on Thursday night with the kids. If I'm judging Adrian and Hoyan about their Christian walk, is that in any way helping them, aiding them, coming alongside them to help them maybe develop their relationship better? No. It's just about me talking bad about them to make me feel better. It's about me using the law to beat them up so I look better. I know a lot of you know Joyce Meyer. And let me preface this by saying I don't agree with a lot of the stuff that she talks about because she is kind of like a prosperity gospel person. But that's not to say that everything she says is awful. She does have a pretty strong testimony, and she does have some good stuff. And I was watching her one time, and she was talking about this prayer list that she keeps on the fridge. It was a list of things that she was meant to be praying for every day, you know, like her family, her church, and so on and so forth. Basic prayer list, right? And she said whenever she would walk by it during the day, if she had covered all those points, had prayed for all those things during the day, she felt pretty good about herself. She felt a little puffed up. Like, all right, I'm doing things okay. But then if she walked by it and she hadn't been praying for those things every day, then she'd be, ugh, I feel awful. I feel all convicted and stuff in a bad way. And it wasn't about the prayer points. It wasn't about praying for her church or praying for her husband or praying for her kids. That wasn't what was motivating her. That wasn't what she was doing. She wasn't doing it out of love. She was doing this to make herself feel better. I got my list ticked off today. I prayed for everything I was supposed to. I'm a good person. Or I didn't get my list done, and I'm a bad person. Either way you go, that neither one of those is being helpful. Either you're praying pridefully to make yourself feel better, or you're missing out on the prayer and making yourself feel worse. And in both cases, it all just comes back to the person praying. It's about how you're going to feel, whether you're making yourself feel bad or good. See, we apply worldly wisdom for our own sakes. It's a wrong mindset. But not only are we self-focused in this, we often mess it up anyway. And you see in the next verse, in verse 12, there is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor? Not only do we use it in the wrong mindset, we can't really do it properly anyway. You cannot judge someone else because you're going to mess it up. I do most all the cooking at home. I mean, that's my skill set, so that's just what I do, right? And the kids like to help sometimes. And over the years, they've developed certain skills. You know, they can do, you know, a lot of what I would consider like basic cooking type stuff, you know. So if we're doing like, you know, like a roast beef with like mashed potatoes and green beans or something, that's something that the Gracie can probably do on her own, right? But if I'm doing like chicken St. Cloud with like a roasted red pepper coulis, okay, that's not really something that she can really help with, okay? If she comes in and says, oh, I want to do the coulis, I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, sure, knock yourself out. You know, there's all the stuff. Go ahead. You know, don't forget to do the emulsification at 50 degrees. You know, that's not going to happen. You see, it's not that she's ignorant. It's not that she has no cooking skills whatsoever. It's just that is beyond her skill set. She doesn't have the skills necessary. Her wisdom in that area is not sufficient. So if she tried to do it, unless I guess I could be surprised, but I'm willing to guess that she's going to mess it up, right? Her wisdom isn't sufficient to get the job done, so I do it for her. Because I am in a position to do it, because I do know how to do it, because I've done it before. I have that capacity. Our wisdom is not sufficient to judge in the same way. We don't have the skill set. We don't have the perspective. We don't have the knowledge. We can't do it in any case. We can't do it properly. We'll mess it up. We often see, especially in New Testament sermons, the Pharisees used is this. The Pharisees are used, they're kind of like a whipping boy, you know, for this type of message. Like, oh, look, they tried to judge, they tried to do the law, and they messed it up, and look how bad they did. These are horrible people. I'm not going to try to beat the Pharisees up. Because they had the right motivations. They were trying to keep the people of God together, to follow the law. They were trying to honor God. But see, they had a very limited perspective. They had the law. They tried to apply it. They tried to judge. They tried to get people in line using this document they had or these various documents they had. And I think we all know how that ended up, right? And of course, you know, these things had to happen in the fullness of time for the prophecies to be fulfilled and so on and so forth. But you see, they had a limited perspective. They didn't have the full picture. They didn't have full and sufficient wisdom. So when they applied their judgments, they messed it up. They made the wrong call. There's an analogy that I like to use. I guess you'd call it an illustration. If an alien came to visit the world and saw some doctors performing surgery on a child, they would probably think it was the most barbaric, horrific thing ever. If you had surgeons there performing a surgery on a child to remove a cancerous tumor that was going to kill them, and this surgery was a life-saving procedure, it's still, from an alien's perspective who has no idea about anything, it's just going to look like a bunch of adults standing over a kid cutting them up, right? They're going to have the completely wrong impression because they don't have the correct perspective. They don't know about everything that's going on. They don't know everything going on around this event. So they make a judgment, and they make a judgment incorrectly. So there's the first thing about worldly wisdom. We use it oftentimes with the wrong mindset. We use it for ourselves, and we use it with a very limited perspective. We move on down to verses 13 and 14. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. You cannot say these things because you do not know them, because you don't have God's perspective. You don't even know if you're going to be alive for sure tomorrow or at the end of the day today. So how can you possibly make plans a year and out? So when we say those things, I'm going to do this or that, or I'm going to be here for a year, then I'm going to go there and do that. What are we doing? Because we don't know for sure. We can't know for sure. So what are we doing? We are trusting in our own selves and in our own plans. We are using our own wisdom, relying on what we want to do, what we can do, what we think we're capable of, This is seen from a worldly perspective as a good thing, right? It's pre-planning. It's retirement. It's goals, right? I mean, who among you has ever gone to a work review at the end of the year, and your boss sat down with you and said, what's your goals for the next year? And you're like, I don't know. I really have no plans. I don't know if I'm going to be alive tomorrow. I have no goals for my department. Who's ever said that? I know I haven't. In my former profession as a restaurant manager, you needed to have goals for like that day, the week, the month. You need to have like optimistic goals like 5 years out. And if you didn't know exactly what you were going to be doing in 6 months, if you couldn't sit down with your boss and say, I'm going to do this quarter and this quarter and that next quarter, and then we're going to do this, I'm going to do that and do this, then you weren't going to have a job very long. And we all knew that those plans may not come about, and in many cases they didn't. But you had to have the goals and plans in place. You had to be able to tell them that you knew where you were going. I know where I'm taking this restaurant. I have plans. This is where we're going. That's what we're going to do. The first time that, hot water with lemon and honey. Great. The first time I sat down with Deanna's parents to talk to them about this path that we're on, that we've been on for the last several years, was not an easy conversation. And we're sitting there at the table. I still remember it vividly. As some of you know, Deanna's dad is 7 feet tall. So him sitting down, like, is looking me in the eye. It's not like a non-intimidating situation, right? And he was the CEO of the YMCA for like a million years. So he's used to sitting across the table from someone and making them feel uncomfortable. You know, the whole leaning forward and, so what are your plans? You know, that kind of thing. So it wasn't an easy conversation. And I had to sit there and tell him, well, I said, well, you know, I'm gonna go back to school. I'm getting out of the restaurant. I'm just signing my half over. I'm just leaving. And I'm going to go back to school full time. And I'm going to get a bachelor's degree. And then I'm going to go to seminary and then get a master's degree. And then I'm going to go get a PhD. And then I'm going to go, you know, teach pastors somewhere. And he was like, well, how are you going to do that? I don't know. At that point, I hadn't even been accepted to the undergraduate school that I was applying to yet. There were still questions about whether my culinary arts credits would transfer. And I didn't know if I was going to get in. I was not the best student in high school or in college the first time, I'll have you know. So my GPA was like half of what it should have been. And yet here I am trying to tell them, nope, God's calling us that way, so that's where we're going to go. And I have no idea how we're going to get there. That's not an easy thing to say. It's not an easy thing to do. But that's what we're supposed to do. You see in the next verse, in verse 15, instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or do that. Sitting there across that table saying, well, this is what God's called us to do, so we're going to do it. It's not the easiest thing in the world to say. People still today, like, ask us what our plans are. And I still have no idea. I don't know where we're going to end up. I mean, I would like Taiwan. I like Taiwan. Taiwanese people are nice. You know, but we have friends there, and I like the place. We've been there a couple of times. You know, I'd love to serve in Taiwan, but I don't know. We may end up there. June May one time said, well, what about Singapore? I was like, I never even thought about Singapore. I guess we could end up there too. Who knows? We might even be here. We might stay the rest of our lives in Scotland. I don't know. I have no idea. But when I say that, to most people, it sounds weird. Especially like when I'm talking to people at New College, like, oh, so what are you going to do when you graduate? Do a postdoc? And then I'm like, I don't know. I've got less than a year before I'm done. And they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I don't know. Wherever God points us to go, I guess that's where we're going to go. It's not easy. It's not easy for me to say that. And I've seen God manifest God's goodness and God's grace time and time and time and time and time again over the last 7-8 years as we've been going through this whole process. I've seen God show up in miraculous and huge and magnificent ways. And still, even then, it's not easy for me to say, I don't know what I'm doing. So it's not easy. Because the default position, the worldly perspective, the expectation is to say that you have plans. That you know what you're doing. You know where you're going to go. We see here in verse 16, as it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. We have plans. We know where we're going. We know what we're doing. That's boasting, and it's evil. And what is this boasting? Well, if we look back at the previous verse, you don't have to do that, but if we go back to the previous verse, what was all that evil boasting? We're going to go to this town and spend a year and make some money. Does that sound evil? I mean, if Peter said, hey, you know, I got a job offer in Glasgow, and, you know, so we're going to move to Glasgow and spend a year there because it's like double the salary, and we're going to save up all that money and then come back, and then I'm going to take my old job back. You know, we're just going to go there for a year and make some money and then come back. Well, we all say, wow, Peter, that's evil. No. It's like, oh, that sounds like a good plan. You know, I think that's a good idea, right? This sounds like someone who's just being responsible. It's a business plan, right? It makes sense. But at the end of the day, it's relying on our own wisdom. I mean, the key there is we'll go here, we'll do that, we'll make money. It's relying on our own wisdom, and it's ultimately for ourselves. How does this end? Well, we can see in verse 17. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. So what is the good? It's to rely on God and not our own wisdom. Not taking God's throne for ourselves. Not worshiping our own wisdom. Not conforming to the ways of the world. So then you ask, okay, well, what's the benefit then, right? Because these verses aren't just all about admonishment, right? You can look through the book of James, and it could look just like a long list of things not to do. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. It's like a big rule book. But that's not what about it is, all right? They're admonishments, but they're admonishments that offer you benefit. They're good for you. It's like vegetables, okay? Think about when you get the most stressed. Is it about things happening right now? Or is it thinking about things that are not yet happening? Current stress, stress right in the moment, is like being attacked, right? If I just jumped on Johnny right now, okay? That is stress in the current moment. How often do you experience that? I mean, how often do you have, I mean, aside from the GMAU guys who get punched by me on a random basis, who among you just gets randomly attacked like Cato, right? It doesn't happen, right? Your stress comes when you're thinking about what's going to be happening in the future, what your plans are for tomorrow, next week, next year. That's when you get stressed. When you think about stuff that's already happened, you may have regret, but you don't get stressed over something that's already happened. You're not stressed out about the fact that your kid fell last week. You know, it's done and over with. You're stressed about things that are going to happen, things that you have plans for next week, next month, next year. You see, we don't spend time worrying about right now. We worry about our retirement accounts. Do we have enough money in our 401k, or do we have enough money in our stock account, or whatever? It's about things that haven't happened yet. It's our plans for the future. And then when do you have more stress? When you're doing it all by yourself, or when you have help? When there's no one else who can handle things, and you are the only one. If you fail, it fails. Whatever you're doing, there's no backup. There's a lot of pressure there. If you're working on a project for school, or you're working on a project for work, you know, or if you're cutting up somebody's brain or something like that, you know, I figured that's what you're going to be doing, cutting up brains. All right? There's no one else there, right? There's not another pair of hands in there on the frontal lobe. Frontal lobe. Right? It's just you. And if you fail, this thing fails. You know, the patient dies on the table. The project fails at work. Your thesis is not going to get written because there's a cat sleeping on it, right? These things just won't get done if you don't do it. There's a lot of pressure there. But these verses tell us that it doesn't have to be like that. We don't need to trust in our own wisdom. Because, see, our wisdom will fail. Not that it won't work, but it will fail, and that it won't work for God. We need to profess our weakness in that we don't know. What does the Bible say about our weakness? Let me see in 2 Corinthians 12:19. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. Our weakness is our lack of knowledge. Our lack of foreknowledge, to be more specific. If we embrace that, if we give it over, then Christ takes the lead. You see, our wisdom, our plans, point back to us. If rather we say, it is the Lord's will, then this will happen or that will happen. If we lay it over, admitting our weakness and lack of knowledge, then our plans take focus. For instance, if you began by saying, if it's the Lord's will, would you say, if it's the Lord's will, I'm going to sell these stocks in 6 months so I can take the profit and buy a new car because I really want a BMW? Or would you say, if it's the Lord's will, next year I'm going to get this new job so I can have more time off so I can travel because I've always wanted to go to Greece? Or if you said, if it's the Lord's will, I will get this new job so I'm off every Friday so I can start volunteering at the homeless shelter on every Friday. You see, you can still plan for the future, but when you put God in front, when God's in the driver's seat, when it's God's wisdom and not your own, then you're not worrying over the future, you're planning for it with focus. See, it's not about our wisdom. It's about casting ourselves at the feet of the cross. It's not that we don't care about tomorrow, okay? We're not being, you know, hedonistic. People were just running around eating Snicker bars for breakfast and jumping off roofs and things like that because we don't care about tomorrow. We care about tomorrow, but we don't have to worry about it. And see, in Matthew 6, 33 and 34, therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Don't worry about tomorrow because you cannot affect it. You don't make your plans for tomorrow, but through God. Lean on God and not your own understanding. I say, okay, well, that sounds great, but practically how do we do this? Right? And we hear messages up here sometimes, and at the end you're just like, okay, that's cool. All right, I guess I'll go to work now. I mean, practically, how do we apply this to our lives? If you, just over the next week, just try this as an experiment. When you're thinking about future plans or doing something, and I'm not talking about, you know, your plans for lunch, like I'm going to go in the kitchen and make a sandwich. Okay, you don't have to be that specific about it. You can if you want, but you don't have to be. But over the next week, I just want you to see putting this phrase in front of the stuff you're going to do. If the Lord wills it. Say, if the Lord wills it, I'm going to go play basketball tomorrow afternoon. Or if the Lord wills it, this Saturday, I'm going to go shopping for new shoes. And see how that feels. See if it feels like you should be doing something else. That's a good indicator. You say, if the Lord wills it, I will spend tomorrow serving in the church. If the Lord wills it, I will encourage my husband, or I will teach my children a Bible lesson. Put God's wisdom at the forefront. Think to yourself, say it out loud, if the Lord wills it, I'm going to do this, that, or the other thing. Put yourself in the back seat and see what happens. Let's pray. Lord God, I just want to thank you for the blessing of your presence here today, Lord. I just thank you for this word. I thank you for the people who have come here to hear it, Lord. I pray that in this coming week that you would just speak to each and every one of us, Lord. Speak to our hearts. Reveal your plans for our lives, Lord. Let us step back and remove our agendas, God, and put you first this week. And to see the massive blessings that come from following you. I pray that you be with us, guide us, direct us, and lead us. In Jesus' name.